One of the things that I think has been most sneakily toxicified is goals. Because, like, dating apps, the reason I bring that up, you see people mention a growth mindset a lot on dating apps. Mm-hmm. And if you read
what I think is important.
If you read what a growth mindset is, it's great. Almost everyone I've gone on a date with has actually meant you need to have money.
Yeah.
That's not what a growth mindset is. But I would argue the majority of people who buy into the idea of a growth mindset read it and go, I need to date someone who has their finances in order and is ambitious with their career and is moving up. If I can't afford more audiobooks, what point is there for a growth mindset?
Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Not jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. With Rudy Tibersi.
What's up, everybody? It's Rudy here, your host of Jokes and the Gym. I'm coming at ya with another episode today. Cool. I'm stoked. This is a good one. This is a good one. We get into the stuff with Dan Telfer, the one and only. Well, there might be other Dan Telfers, but the only one I know. Dan Telfer's awesome. He's hilarious. He's a great comedian. He's a dungeon freaking master. And I was lucky enough to have him on the podcast this week. There's a lot of good stuff we get into. We definitely get into a lot of stuff about relationships and how to grow as a person. One might also call it self-help kind of stuff. And I love that stuff. I eat it up. I've always been one to read books on relationships and communication and just stuff that's challenging for me. And Dan and I were on the same page with a lot of that stuff. We definitely are in sync with some of the people we follow and some of the people he's suggested I follow. I have and have really enjoyed it. So stick around to hear what some of his big recommendations are. That's one of my favorite ways to learn about new stuff is just recommendations from other people I like and know and care about. And this is no different. Dan has some great recommendations. Dan's awesome. And so check out the ways that he has discovered to calm down his central nervous system, to be okay being on his own, and some of the other resources that he includes in his life on a daily basis. I love it. I love hearing from Dan and other creative people, smart people, funny people. I'm stoked that I get to do this and that I get to share these conversations with y'all. So thank you very much for hanging out if you're doing that today. And if you're not hanging out, then you'll never hear this. So you know what? Go do your thing, person who's not listening. I care about you and you're never going to know it. So that's cool. No worries. Now, I want to take a moment to take some time. Come on, Rudy, do some editing before you just start flapping your gums. Flapping your gums, big man. That's one of my favorite turns of phrases. Flapping your gums. It's very visual. And nobody flaps their gums anymore, right? We need a few more gum flappers. That's what I'm here to talk about. Flapping the old gumaroonies. So if you want to flap your gums, don't forget Dr. Dick's Gum Flapping Cream. If you want to flap those gums, go to Dr. Dick's and he'll flap your gums with all that cream of his. So, thanks to my sponsor, Dr. Dick's Gum Flapping Cream. And if you can't find that, it's because it's not real and it doesn't exist. And I have no idea what they would put in gum flapping cream. Probably caffeine. That's what I'm on. I'm on gum flapping liquid. And it's caffeine, baby. I hope you are having a great day, whatever you're doing, wherever you are. Maybe you're wandering around, walking around the neighborhood aimlessly. Maybe you're pumping some iron at the gym and you're like, I want to hear two comedians talk about relationships while I do bench press. Maybe that's what's happening. And if it is, I salute you. I hope you hit that PR today. I hope you get the appropriate amount of reps to help you go forward in your day with joy, with conviction, with strength, flexibility, and balance, baby. Thank you so much for stopping by. And I hope you really enjoy this conversation with me and Dan Telfer.
Ah, no, look at that. We're on the internet. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Jokes in the Gym. I'm your host, Rudy Tiburcy. I'm super stoked to have my guest here today. We met at a show at Lucky's, I believe. I'm trying to remember if that was it was pre-pandemic. Was that pre-pandemic?
Yes, it was 2019.
2019. Cool. Well, right on. And today, my guest, he's a stand-up comedian, and he's a freelance dungeon master. He's out there. He's been writing for years and tons of publications. He's been on TV, and he has a podcast called
Nerd Poker.
Nerd Poker. And you can find his website at dantelfer.carrd.co if you want him to do some DMing and other stuff like that. Everybody put your hands together for Dan Telfer. Woo!
What's up? Hey, and yeah, nice. Of course, I've got like an Instagram where I link my whole link tree of stuff.
Right.
But I do feel like that's what I'm doing the most lately is freelance dungeon mastering.
Yeah, how's it going? How's the DMing going?
Oh, that stuff is great, you know, and it pays really well. It's just hard to find groups of people who want to play together. So I also have a Patreon. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, Patreon/Dan Telfer. And I'll like matchmake people.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you like put parties together? Is that what you mean by matchmake?
Yes.
Okay.
Whereas if you do it through the card.co site, you kind of have to come with your group. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everyone wants to come in a group these days, right?
Hey, you know, depends on your boundaries.
Yeah,
you know, you're good. But
Group coming. That I've been in Oregon for just long enough to think that that's a normal thing. I think I watched Midsummer recently enough to think it's a normal thing. You know,
yes. And I'm not polyamorous, but you know, because I live in Los Angeles, I've been broken up with upwards of 5 or 6 times because my partner wanted to become polyamorous. So I'm familiar with the lifestyle.
Yeah, it's happened to me once or twice, and I think it's a bad step in the relationship.
I think there are people who are naturally polyamorous, but let me put it this way. I have read The Ethical Slut, which is meant to sort of explain polyamory, and I think I've read it more. I've read it, and most polyamorous people have not. They just sort of decide they want to fuck a bunch of people. So, like, I think, you know, there's something to be said for knowing what it actually means versus I want to be taken on expensive dates by as many people as possible.
That sounds nice. It's nice if you can.
It is.
It sounds nice if you can be ethical.
The world's broken. If you want to have 7 sugar daddies, my best to you.
Yeah, no hate from this side of the fence. I wouldn't mind a sugar mama or two. Good golly.
So, same, especially if they wanted nothing from me in return, like so many people I've dated. But yeah.
That's not dating. I don't know if that's dating.
This is definitely what your podcast is about. But I feel like there's been a real uptick of people who like they want to be romanced and they want to bring nothing to it and they want no boundaries. And it's like, it's like you really want a situationship? Is that really what you want?
That's what everybody wants, you know? In the weird way, I mean, I got jokes about it, I talk about it. It's like, I would love to date women my age. I don't have the resume for it. You know, it's like, I'm 40. I got an entry-level job. People my age don't want to date like I'm dating. I'm a comedian. It's hard.
I'm 45. I think there's like a real sweet spot between like 38-year-olds and 43-year-olds, I will say, they are like, oh, I want someone who's mature and has an idea of how to take care of themselves and be interdependent rather than codependent and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But anything younger, they don't give a shit about anything, and they're trying to sow their wild oats. And anything older, for completely different reasons, they don't give a shit about anything and they want to sow their wild oats. So there's like this little pocket where people haven't given up on life yet, but also are like, well, I've lived a life.
Yeah. And
before or after that, you're kind of fucked. So I'm starting to age into being just generally fucked. Because I don't think I want to date. I'm 45. I can do 35 to 55. just pretty standard.
Yeah.
10 years in either direction. And I can be tempted to go slightly outside of it, but I've dated someone who's like 12 years younger than me, and boy, oh boy,
there's a difference.
They do not understand some things about life, and
yeah,
it can, they, it's weird how they'll be, I love older men. I want to date older men. And you're like, okay. And then date number two, they're like, I'm scared. That's like, okay, well then let's just not do this again.
Yeah. And I've totally been in the span of a week, I went on a date with a 47-year-old and a 26-year-old, and boy, howdy.
I could never go 20. I mean, I'm talking 28, you know, like that's too young. I can't anymore. And when I say scary too, like, I mean commitment, not like I'm creepy.
Yeah.
I could be creepy, but I think I'm creepy in a mature sort of way.
You're a mature creep.
Yes. Well, no. Creep is such a different word than creepy. I am a incredibly docile person with boundaries, and that is terrifying to a lot of people.
Yeah. Okay. Docile and boundary. There's an album title for you.
Enthusiastic yet docile. Yes. And yeah. Man, it's I can't go that young, Rudy.
It wasn't my intent. It was just someone I met. We went out, and it's like, oh, you're 26, and that is a different ball game. Like, people who grew up who are in under 30 grew up in a different world than we did.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to talk about? You don't have to like all the same music and bands, but I do think once they start talking about how like SpongeBob is for old people, and you're like, oh, what? I'm too old for SpongeBob. This isn't good.
This is bad news. Yeah. Well, what actually kind of helped me put things in perspective was Megan Thee Stallion lyric. And it was something like, thinking you're a player, but you're a member on the team. And it's like, oh, yeah, that makes, it's hot girl summer for you. You're having fun. This is good. This is a nice, and then that kind of just put me in a mindset of like, oh yeah, like, people just date so haphazardly these days, and that's fine. It doesn't have to be a ring on your finger by the time you're dating, but it is fun to kind of like enjoy your time and settle in with somebody and all that jazz. I mean, I'm old and my legs get tired at the end of the day, and I'm ready to like wind down and cuddle with a friend that I like and some cats.
Yeah, that would be great. But you know, I have my friends in my 40s.
Yeah.
And we mostly just watch like horror movies and dark theaters and then go back to our spouses, or in my case, my cats. Mm-hmm. And then I have friends in my 30s where I'll go to like parties and I'll go to concerts with them. And my friends in my 40s be like, why don't you date some of those exciting people in their 30s? Thumbs up, by the way.
right there.
I forget that happens.
Why?
They'll be like, why don't you just date? And I'll be like, well, because they're all having a hot girl summer. None of them... Like nobody has fun anymore without just wanting to like have no rules. And that's fine. The world's on fire, but yeah.
Can I have a room temperature fall? That's all I'm asking for.
Can I have an autumnal? Yes.
Yeah. Middle-aged man season.
Oh boy.
High sock winter. I don't know. What are we doing? Yeah. But I'm fine. I'm thankful that I can still at least talk to people in their 20s. It's nice. It's just nice to talk to a 20-something year old. I don't need anything more than that. But and part of that is because I exercise. You know, I'm moving and I'm moving around. I'm around people of all ages all the time. And at some point, I'm just like, I'm not even trying to do anything more than interact with another human. And that feels great to me. Feels nice to be on that side and like not try to get things, not try to go anywhere, just interact with humans, and in a job where you interact with a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that perspective. You just a hello and a goodbye and I see ya. Enjoy this thing. And that's how you are probably with DMing and stuff, right? You just have a certain amount of time with people, you do the thing together, and then you part ways, right?
Yeah, although I think for me at least, maybe this is just my demo, or just because, you know, my podcast, the most famous person on it's Brian Posehn, who's like in his mid to late 50s, if not 60, I forget how old he is, but he's an elder nerd. Yeah. And so I feel like a lot of people who hire me for DMing are like either 40 and up, or it's like those people's kids. I'm DMing for those people's kids. So there's a little That's bit cute. Of a gap for me. But I will say, as you know, as a comedian in a college town, there's just so many terrifyingly young, confident comics now. So you'll be doing shows with them and you'll be like, oh, you're not damaged enough for me to relate to you.
Yeah, it's
but you seem nice.
You're in solid shape still. Keep that. I'll keep you at an arm's length.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. The youth in comedy scenes is remarkably confident.
I think like 10 years ago, people started being younger and like from stable childhoods all of a sudden. And it was like, and then now TikTok kind of runs the show. And like, you need like 100,000 TikTok followers to get booked at clubs. Like,
it's so weird to me. And it happens. And people, and I'm like, I've never heard of this person. And they literally have 100,000 followers and stuff like that. And that's the name of the game. That's how you get booked.
Yeah. And I never figured out how to translate my, you know, was it like 50,000 Twitter followers to one of those platforms. So now all these clubs are like, well, where's your ex account if you have that many followers? And I'm like, well, I deleted that because I'm not a monster. So the landscape is changing really fast, just in time for me to have my midlife crisis. But
Fun. Yeah, you're coming up on it.
Yeah.
Do you have a YouTube channel?
Yes, but I don't do anything with it. So, yeah. I mean, I wish that I... Now I'm going to look at my YouTube channel while we talk. I wish that I had like figured out how to make a show on my own and like get a series going. I have a few. Yeah, there's like some stand-up clips on it. I only have 403 subscribers. I haven't uploaded anything in 3 years.
Yeah.
Beginning of the pandemic, I put some clips up. But like, I don't know. I'm just not the kind of person. I'm like the wrong demo in so many ways to have been on top of the filming your set on a nice camera set, getting on TV at the right time. Like I've been on TV, but I'm not one of those people who's got a ton of content.
Yeah. It's when I was unemployed, in addition to searching for work, I was starting on the content wheel. I was trying to figure that out a little bit more. And now that I've got more days that are filled with jobs, it's like, oh, okay, I'm doing that less. It feels less pertinent, important, necessary, but it was nice to do to get going. And I bet you could find more of an audience on YouTube. I think YouTube is a decent place to migrate to because you're not this flashy, quick, boom, 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 boom kind of guy. You talk about things at length that you love, that you enjoy. And that's where people go to find long form content.
What's tricky is I need new clips up there. I need a new camera.
Yeah.
What's nice about Instagram is you can chop a TV appearance into like 12 clips.
Mm-hmm.
But if you try and do that on YouTube, the TV network has a robot that will get your clip pulled down. Mm-hmm. So I hear you. You're correct. I will say I'm trying to put a special out next year, and it'll probably go up exclusively on YouTube because the streaming networks are trash. I really shouldn't say that because I'd love to be employed by one, but at the same time, you know, I've watched what's happened with the strike, and I've been trying to get writing work this whole time, and I can tell you, like, nobody wants to work at Netflix anymore at all.
That sucks. Like,
people want money. People want to be employed, so they don't want to say that. And I don't think I'm like saying what people are afraid to say or any bullshit like that. But like, I think that the people I know who work at Netflix don't make any residuals because of the streaming rules are still unkind. And they get dogged by people who are like, why are you working for the platform that employs Dave Chappelle? And then they're just sort of without... Like Netflix keeps making money on them for perpetuity and they never see another dime. And it's like, oh, and now they're doing the like max thing of just dumping all their content into a recycling bin for tax purposes. And it's like, why even do it?
Yeah. It seems sad. And so it's like, I love seeing the DIY stuff. I went to a local
filmmakers
premiere last week at an art house theater here at Eugene Art House, a guy I work with, a 19-year-old who just finished high school, and like made a high school movie about high school students with high school students. And it's like, I love seeing that. I want to see somebody make a series like that out of their own budget,
and
just doing their own
thing. Yeah, yeah. And all those people who were making content for YouTube or, you know, specials or series or pilots or screenplays, like being put together via Kickstarter, those folks are starting to, I think, like, become even bigger than they already were. And they were already pretty big. That was already like a thriving community. And those folks are starting to realize, like, they're the alternative to Netflix now. People who have their own brand, small groups, people who aren't in it to create a dynasty. And, you know, they might become dynasties eventually, but a big reset button got hit. And I think, I think everything is going to look completely different in 5 years than it does now. And you can already tell, you know, there's just no real value in what the brass ring was at the beginning of the pandemic. You know?
Yeah, it changes so quick. It's pretty ridiculous. I, yeah, what'll 5 years look like? Who knows? You know, who freaking knows?
Well, I think we saw beginning pandemic, like, people were already kind of going, oh, having my album stream sucks. I just want to put out vinyl records. And I think it's going to go more and more in the direction of, we just put our video out on YouTube, put a vinyl out, and if we can avoid putting anything on Spotify altogether, we will.
Yeah.
I don't think Spotify and Apple Music make no sense for us. I think it's already bad enough for musicians, but I'm curious what you think about this, because I've got some albums out and you make, you know, I get a lot of plays, but I still only make like a few hundred bucks a quarter.
Yeah.
And it's not enough to live off of. And I think people just listen once. People, people like there's Patton Oswalt albums that I listened to like 20 times back in the day because I was so obsessed with them. But you know, now that I'm older and I've been doing stand-up for a while, I don't listen to really any albums unless I think they're like an important study or they're a friend. And I still, that, you know, I'll watch Patton, but like I don't re-listen, and I don't re-listen, no one re-listens to comedy. Even if they love it, they'll be like, oh, that's so great. Yeah, I mean, I would buy it, but I don't even know how anymore. You know,
I have one or two albums I'll listen to once or twice a year. I'll listen to Two Drink Mike once a year, at least. I'm a big fan of Birbiglia. Just a nice, tight, joke-written hour kind of a deal. I like seeing early albums of people and how they progress. But I don't. You have to kind of nerd out in comedy for a while to kind of get in the groove. But then that dies down.
So here's an example, I think, that makes my point too. Like, the new Green Day album, okay, came out in February, I think.
Oh, wow.
It is probably my fourth or fifth favorite Green Day album, but that means it's still pretty good.
Okay.
Because I love Green Day.
Yeah.
They put out a lot of very mediocre or boring albums, but I do think, like, this is one of their best in a while.
A nice little comeback.
But like fifth or sixth favorite, like it's fourth, maybe, you know, like there's a lot I like better.
Right.
And there might even be like seventh or eighth if I really start getting into the grind. But my point is, this is not my favorite Green Day album. Some people hate Green Day. Some people only like one album. Some people think they haven't made anything good since the 90s. I like all these better. Yeah. I've listened to the new Green Day album at least like 35 times in the car, walking around my apartment.
Right.
35 times in a few months.
Yeah.
My favorite album, I mean, like, let's just use your example, Two Drink Mike. You probably listen to comedy more than I have, and you're like, I listen to it at least once a year.
Yeah.
Once a year!
Yeah.
An album that is my, like, ninth favorite by one of my favorite bands gets 35 plays in a few months. You know, like the fact that we're on the same platform. Hello, cat behind you.
Yeah,
the fact that we're on the same platform as them is nuts. Because, like, when
the same thing. It's not the same product, even close.
Do you have an album on those places?
I just have a YouTube special.
That's awesome. I need one of those. I have a Vimeo one, which, guess what? No money to be made off of that. But I should put it back up. I would if it weren't for the fact that it's 14 years old. But
Clip it.
I mean, I am.
Yeah.
It's on Instagram. Work. But that's my point being, it's demoralizing because you can ignore it. You can be too big for it. But when you're getting the like updates on how your albums are doing on Spotify, they're always like, musicians like you are this core of Spotify. Congratulations, music artist. And you're like, eh, and they're like, your song is doing really well. And you're, it's like, that, you don't even know who I am. You don't, why am I here? You know, it's not a good platform for comedy anymore.
Have there been any services that cater more explicitly to comedy?
Oh boy. Like I feel like there are, and I'm just not aware of it enough, but I, for a while, Apple was okay because they had iTunes and you could have a comedy chart.
Yeah. The chart. Right? Number one on iTunes.
Which I've been. I've had my albums go number one on comedy. And you know, I remember there were for both of them, it's like one time I, you know, Mark Maron was number two.
And then he
was nice enough to share that I beat him. And then another time, Jim Gaffigan was number two, and he was nice enough to share that I beat him. And both of them just knocked me down within a few days. But
Dan had his Tuesday, and that was it.
And there's nothing like that anymore. I don't think Apple Music has really anything except for, you know, and also iTunes, like you could sort of see how comedy would fit in there. But music, we're literally in an app called Music.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody's really looking for stand up there.
Yeah, no, you're right. Stand-up is such a weird thing, and that's why it's so much more fun to focus on the in-person aspect of it. It's like there's nothing like having a great set in a great room, but it's ethereal and it vanishes, and no one else gets it except those 50 or 60 people or whatever sometimes. So,
like, I'm in the music app right now. I've scrolled through all kinds of DJ mixes, well-being, all the different decades, and there's nowhere in here is there comedy. Comedy doesn't even show up in their categories. You have to search for it.
Spoken word's
not even there. So we're talking spatial audio, hip hop, country, pop, sleep is a category, but not comedy. R&B, Latin, dance, DJ mixes, hits, fitness, feel good, sing, party, alternative, rock, classic rock. Focus is a category, but not comedy. Essentials, Christian, classical, Apple Music classical, Musica Mexicana, hard rock, Urbano Latino, K-pop, kids, family, music videos.
That's a
up
lot.
Next, pop Latino, decades, metal, 2000s, indie, electronic, behind the songs, jazz, it goes on for like a dozen more, no comedy. And that is what we're left with. So I feel like it really is like up to us to make a new thing. And that's why I ask about like what you think about like vinyl and YouTube. And I'm glad you have a YouTube. But that's what it is. That's what we have. Yeah. I think it's all about new things now. I really don't think we can look at Netflix or to an extent YouTube even and be like, that is the future.
Yeah.
It's what we have now.
It's what's here. It's what the most people see. And then it just keeps the power and money in the same 20 people's hands, because then people come out to the people they've seen on TV or on Netflix. Or someone at the Eddie Pepitone show last week yelled out like 40 minutes into a set, "I saw you on Netflix." And it's like, duh. Like, that's why people came out to see him on a Tuesday. Like, they've seen it. Like, who cares? And there's just these weird throngs of comedy fans that are out and like don't love comedy, but they want to get their own attention in the comedy show while watching other comedians. And it's so weird to me. Like, we have a comedy club in Eugene for the first time, really.
Oh,
like
cool.
A full-time. Yeah, it's very cool. Olsen Run Comedy Club, I got to feature for Jenny there. Yeah, you connected Jenny Zagrino.
Jenny's
with
the best.
Yeah.
Jenny, I'm so glad I got to know her. I don't know if we dated for like a week and then became like really good friends after we decided we weren't compatible. It was
love it.
Yeah, like she's one of the funniest people alive, and she's out there just hauling ass, touring, and there's only so much room for that right now. I don't know that unless you are a certain Netflix personality who caters in non-punchlines and misogyny. It's hard to be a young, like, up and coming, by young, I mean under 50, up and coming comedian who, like, you know, can make any kind of imprint on clubs or venues. I mean, I know Jenny's doing clubs, but she's also doing like theaters.
Yeah. And it was just a good, she did the club. There's other places I could have worked with Jenny, but it's also nice to have a club around to work with people that might be coming around in a month or two or have an extra day here and there, that kind of thing. And so
when I last came to town, I think it was like, I could do one of four rock clubs, which is great.
Exactly. You did Lucky's, and that's where I filmed my special, was there at that place, that bar you did, and it was a blast. Super excited that I got to do a special in my hometown with a bunch of friends and family there, and like, now I have that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of the thing that allowed me to say, I'm a comedian with my chest out. You know what I mean? It just, it doesn't always feel that way, but it's like, I have something that I put out there, and that feels great, so... We'll see how it goes in the future. I'm just
well, that's good. It's good though. I think it might feel like, I don't know, whatever it feels like to put that special out from Lucky's in Eugene, but there's not really something more satisfying out there. Other than just like getting a Netflix special for a few million dollars, which is fewer and fewer people.
Yeah,
they've really got it like down to just like a handful of people who they're willing to give that money to, and they've really done away with paying comics any kind of middle ground set or middle ground special. There's, it's like you could be a in one of their little like, oh, Asians of Tuesday. That's the new Netflix collection of 5-minute sets from Asians who were born on a Tuesday. You know, and then none of them get paid residuals. They all make union minimum. They make like $1,100 before manager and agent fees.
And now they're able to say they have a Netflix.
You will make more from your YouTube than they make on Netflix, and that's obscene.
Well, I mean, I don't know about all that, Dan. Thank you for your vote of confidence.
If you... Over the course, and I'm exaggerating and also not exaggerating, if you, over the course of however long the rest of your life is, Rudy, you make $1,100, you will outdo Netflix specials. Think of it that way. You could make,
You
make $100 a year.
Let's
be super humble, right? Let's like, if you make $20 a year from that special,
it sounds good.
You could live long enough to outdo Netflix people.
Heck yeah, baby. I'm 40, so I'm halfway there. I think I'm done. I think it's halfway. I would be happy if I got to 80. When would you be happy if you died at this age? Or at what age would you be happy?
It would have been great if it happened when I was like 18. I think I really would have gone out at the top of my game.
You were just a stud at 18, just pure Dan.
I don't know. I mean, like, you know, I'm a cancer survivor. I've powered through that a couple of times. I think at a certain point you just go like, numbers are meaningless. I just want to, I want to die before I lose autonomy. Right. Like I just want like somebody to know about my, do not resuscitate. As long as somebody knows about that, I'm ready to go whenever. Like, if I am unable to speak, walk, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah, totally.
I would love to make that 110, but if it's at 65, if it's at 49, so be it. Get me the fuck out of here.
So be it. Yeah, as a fan of horror films, you probably imagined a million different fun ways to go.
Look, we all saw the Metallica video. Yeah, like it's a wild ride this life. I mean, 80. Let's just say 80 would be great. That's my goal.
Yeah.
Let's get to 80, but be functional. If you know, my brain and my dick stop working before that, maybe we'll just call it an early night. We'll just
it's like I want a little blood flowing still, and let's have some fun. So to get to 80, what are you doing? What are the things that, Dan, what has your gym been lately? Are you moving around? What's your activity level?
A little bit. I'd love to be doing more. I'm definitely like the least inspiring person you're going to have on your podcast, but I have survived cancer, so I'm happy to go back to leaning on that if it helps.
I'd love to hear more. Yeah.
I don't have enough income right now to have a gym membership, but I do really like when I can afford to go to a boxing gym in Burbank mm-hmm. that does like a la carte, which is relatively affordable. I think boxing mm-hmm. is really nice, and I try to do as much of that as possible. But on a more just humble thing, I do yoga with Adrienne on YouTube.
Love Adrienne. Big fan of
yoga with Adrienne. She's the shit.
She totally is.
She does a good job of being independently wealthy from it and not showboating it on her channel, which a lot of people uh-huh. do once they become like influencers. I got
5 Lamborghinis as a yogi.
Right. Her dog wanders in, but that's it. You don't really get a sense of like, oh, look, everybody, this is my new diet powder.
Yeah.
But the stuff I do is like, I do a lot of somatic exercises to get my scent. Oh, you don't know about that shit?
Yeah, give me some info on the somatics. Really? Oh, I want to hear it.
I think more valuable to me than the boxing gym, which I love, is uh-huh. somatic stuff. So there is this very scientifically backed concept of your central nervous system being your sort of actual like mind, the part of your existence that is like, we think of our brain as having all the high level decisions and our body mm-hmm. as a tool of our brain, mm-hmm. but your central nervous system contains memories. Your central nervous system contains feelings mm-hmm. and opinions, and it's all stored in there as much as it is up here. Your brain like can execute commands, but it's really just like the MS-DOS mm-hmm. of the PC mm-hmm. that is your whole body. And so yeah. somatic is about waking up the nerves, the major nerves in your body that get shut down by different hormones, right. Cortisol, especially, you know, when you start having a lot of anxiety, cortisol yeah. from stress will fuck you up so bad. And I have a lot of anxiety. It's the worst
thing for your body.
Yeah, and I overdose on it almost every day. So a really, yeah. really helpful thing for me to do is like wake up the nerve system in my body so I feel like I have some control over it. Otherwise, yeah, you go hypervigilant all day.
Mm-hmm.
You just go into this state of not being present. You just kind of like your mind is off floating in the rumination land of what could be. And that is mm-hmm. so unhealthy, like cortisol, like body-wise, but also mental health, like it'll make you so depressed. And so there's these things you can do just laying yeah. down on your, okay. Just laying down where you just like, you rock your legs side to side in a specific way. You turn your head.
Some yoga type poses or
it's like, what if yoga was deliberately lazy?
Oh, I love the sound of this.
So I try to do here. My priority is I wake up and I do it. Mm-hmm. And I do it again midday if I feel like I need it. And it makes all the world a difference. It's like for me being hydrated or taking my antidepressants, it's like, okay, this is
mm-hmm.
gonna keep me functioning. Cause I love the gym. I love exercising when it feels good. But like, if I am run down and have no money and no time, this is mm-hmm. what will get me feeling in touch with my body. And like, I can keep moving. So, there's a really great there's this really awesome woman who I saw, a trauma counselor,
yeah,
and she was like, yo, check this lady out. I think her account is like workout witch, like underscore yeah. workout witch or something. Hang on that.
Yeah, I'm including so much more like regenerative, recuperative time in my workouts and physical being just on the day-to-day basis, and it makes the hugest difference when you're just like, it's like a form of meditation in a sense, right?
Yes. So if you go, yeah, it's theworkoutwitch.com. Her name's Liz, and she does a ton of stuff on Instagram, and yeah, it's just it's somatic exercises,
and it's just kind of like, I imagine like an Imodium AD commercial, you know, or whatever, where the like film slowly covers your body of like this film of joy or of presence, of softness, of release.
And I think like, of it as like, have you ever lived in an apartment or a house where the wiring was really bad and like the power outlets didn't work, or like there was a flood and like something in the walls was like moldy? It's like, what if you could shake your house and all that would fix itself? That's what it kind of feels like to me. The stuff that's in between the walls suddenly like self-resolving.
That sounds amazing. Why isn't everyone doing this? Why isn't everyone shaking the walls?
It's neuroscience, but I think a lot of people think it sounds like quackery. And I understand why, but this is something that I've had my, you know, general practitioner say is a great idea, a trauma specialist say is a great idea, and it's awesome. There's all kinds of stuff you can do specifically for your central nervous system.
Yeah,
that I'm like, this is as important as you know, going for a hike.
Totally. And I've been a lifter for 25 years, right? I've been a lifter since high school. It's just been I love exercise, lifting weights, strength training. I think everybody should do strength training in some form. I think everyone can benefit from it at any point in their lives.
I got hand weights.
Yeah, exactly. Do a little something. Yeah, do 5 reps when you got a couple minutes. You know, take a minute to just get the blood flowing, move around, fight off osteoporosis for a week or two longer, and it doesn't take much time. And when you get in that mindset of like going to the gym, getting better and better and better, lifting heavier weights, blah, 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 that takes its toll on your central nervous system. So I was just so run down from trying to do that stuff for so many years that now when I've kind of adjusted my approach to training to a more athletic or unilateral or functional style of training that's more fun and a little more plyometric and includes a few different things and isn't just like pumping iron, like my body feels so much better. Like, it's amazing what just a few tweaks can do over time. And like, it doesn't take a lot to feel a lot better.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
I think you have to find a balance of, okay, is this just new age woo type stuff? And is this like too mechanic number oriented?
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a lot of really unfortunate mindsets that can come from the diet industry and calorie counting. But, you know, I have high because of stress. Like I need to watch my sodium. Cancer took out one of my kidneys. So I've got shitty kidney left over from chemo. Like I have to try to watch that stuff. I have to try to stay healthy. And I think it's important to look at those numbers. But if you're somebody with anxiety, it's really easy for OCD to take over. It's really easy for you to hyperfixate. And I use the prefix hyper maybe in a way that might make people suspicious. But like you can look at the numbers and just be like obsessed with them. And then years of your life go by and you're not healthy. Right. And that has happened to almost everyone I know. It's happened to me where you just are like, if I can just hit this number of reps, if I can just work out this many times a day, everything will be fine. And it's just a replacement for some other kind of obsession in your life.
Totally.
And so I think it helps to just be, what is it?
I worked out after work yesterday and my coworkers were like, I wish I had that same dedication. And I was like, well, it's almost kind of an addiction as well. So
it has to be what makes your body feel good. And that's, I really like chill stuff. Because I feel like I could be doing more, but life is so hard sometimes. It's much more important that you find balance than a goal. I think goals are great, but one thing dating has actually taught me is when people talk about toxic positivity, one of the things that I think has been most sneakily toxicified is goals. I think goals
sneakily toxicified.
Yeah, like that's my next album. But like I think goals have been sneakily toxicified because like we need them. Goals are so important. Goals are everything. But then people the sort of self-care industry I think has kind of figured that out and monetized goals and tricked a lot of people.
Gamified.
gamify, because like dating apps, the reason I bring that up, you see people mention a growth mindset a lot on dating apps. And if you read,
which I think is important,
if you read what a growth mindset is, it's great. Almost everyone I've gone on a date with has actually meant you need to have money. That's not what a growth mindset is. But I would argue, the majority of people who buy into the idea of a growth mindset read it and go, I need to date someone who has their finances in order and is ambitious with their career and is moving up. And it's like, what it means is having an open mind and evolving as a person.
Yeah.
That's great. That's what a goal should be. But there are so many little cues in our world that are designed to, like the fact that goal, a growth mindset is something you'll find in a book. So the people who are most into a growth mindset are people who've listened to like a bunch of audiobooks they paid for. And they think it's like the consumerism thing. If I can't afford more audiobooks, what point is there for a growth mindset?
I love an audiobook. Do you have any free library apps? I'm using the heck out of those things.
Yeah. And I also will occasionally buy an audiobook because I think it's important to just like have a thing that you can get access to anytime, even when the library no longer has it on available. But most of the time they do. And I am very socialist anarchist too. And just am kind of always wanting to prepare myself to not buy into something that I have to buy into.
Right. So do you have a book or two that you go back to, that you listen to for, to get you in, like to calm the CNS, to get you in a place you want to be, to prep for work, to get you out of the house? Do you have any books or philosophies like that you like to abide by?
I mean, they're very self-carry. I don't know how much they sound like physical health books. But
it's about physical, mental, holistic well-being. Is Jokes in the Gym is not necessarily the most accurate name.
Welcome to my brain gym, Rudy.
Exactly. So, what's your brain gym like?
So I would say if you want to take care of your brain and be kind to yourself, there's sort of like a triple threat of books that have been really awesome for me. Self-Compassion by Kristen Neff.
Oh, I love Kristen Neff.
Kristen F. rules, and that book, Self-Compassion, is a great starting point to be like, what kind of word choices do I use where I'm actually really hurting myself?
Yeah. I've tried to stay away from value-based language as much as I can.
Oh, my God. That kind of stuff is so pervasive. And I remember I can't remember. It was a black woman she's an author who I saw on Oprah in the 90s who started talking about that. And I was like, oh, she's right. We word things changes makes the way we difference. Think of everything every day, every minute. And it's she's really good about that. And then Boundary Boss by Terry Cole.
Okay.
T-E-R-R-I. Terry Cole is a really great trauma therapist. And so her approach to boundaries is really central nervous system oriented, where she's like, if you feel bad about something, if you listen to your body, the bad feeling is coming from a very specific part of your body that's not always your brain. Mm-hmm. It'll be often your stomach or your chest, but sometimes even your knee, right? And it's like, why is that happening? Your body will tell you. If you just sit and listen, your body will be like, you hate going to the movies because you threw up at the movies when you were 5, and that's why it gives you a stomach ache. And if that happens just from just sitting there and listening.
Is that you at the movies?
No, that's just some random
thank
shit.
Thank God.
I'm a great improviser, Rudy. But
you nailed it.
But I found it to be 100% accurate.
Yeah.
Absolutely totally. No question. Every time you feel uneasy about something, if you can just stop the world and melt with yourself, if you can just pause and instead of react to everything, go like, wait, why do I feel like shit right now? Some part of your body will tell you exactly what point in your history makes you uneasy right now. And so Boundary Boss is good because boundaries is what it's about, but she takes you through the very basics of figuring out why you need things, why you need these boundaries in your life. Because boundaries are about wants, needs, preferences, and deal breakers. Mm-hmm. And only by listening to yourself do you really know what you want, need, prefer, and will be a deal breaker. So that's great. And it's one of the best books I've ever read, because it's got like a workbook in it too, where you just journal everything down. And there's a lot of books like that where this one's like very like, make a list. Here it comes. You're going to feel some real uneasy stuff, but and by the end of it, I was like, oh, I feel like I really understand how I work. And then the third one is more fun. How to Be Alone by Lane Moore. How to Be Alone. It's great. She's a really funny comedian in New York. Also a musician. She has a podcast. And
what's her name?
Lane Moore.
Okay, cool.
And there's a lot of books like that where, like, for a third book, I'd just be like, go listen to Platonic. There's a great book called Platonic about like putting more focus on friendships than romance. And there's all kinds of books out there. Marissa something wrote Platonic. But just once you have the self-compassion and the boundaries, just how do you keep reframing things? So when these tools feel like they're not enough, you can feel more like it's relatable. Or Jillian Turecki. Do you know Jillian Turecki?
I follow her. I like her.
She's a fucking genius. She's really good at kind of like being like, okay, like you like romance, huh? Guess what? This is why it's hard. Yeah.
Do ya?
and I love balancing stuff like listening to her podcast and then going back to Platonic. And a friend of mine just recommended The Other Significant Others by Rhianna Cohen. Platonic is written by
Esther Perel. Have you read either of her books?
Huge fan of Esther Perel.
She's awesome.
Mating in Captivity is my preferred of the two, because the other one's basically about infidelity, which I feel like I understand. And Mating in Captivity, I think, is a little like it covers infidelity enough. I think the other one is more for people who are in a marriage that requires counseling. But her podcast is really good, where you listen to her marriage counseling sessions. Where should we begin?
Yeah, where should we begin? There's been a couple good TV couples therapy. Did you ever see any of Couples Therapy? I think that was a Showtime show. That was pretty cool. I love seeing like the ins and outs of people's relationships. Like that's like after The Bachelor. You know, like I want to see Couples Therapy of The Bachelor and Bachelorettes. You know, would be interesting.
Jillian Turecki did this amazing thing where she's so matter of fact, right? She's so like down to business, no bullshit. Like her brand is like this very like deadpan honesty where you're like, oh, like she doesn't care if all of her listeners never fall in love again. She just wants them to do it the right way. She did an episode where her listeners, she was like, I'm watching Love is Blind. Would you guys like me to break down what I think of the current? And she asked people on Instagram and people lost their minds. And so she did an episode.
Oh, fun.
On her podcast, that's just her breaking down everyone on Love is Blind. And it's amazing hearing somebody who is like morally opposed to this premise be like, oh, I'm still addicted to this show. And here's what I think of every single person. Hearing Jillian Turecki, who's this very like empathetic but no nonsense person, say so and so kind of sucks. Really satisfying.
Very juicy. It's such a nice bite listen to. I love that. Oh, that's fun. I'll have to listen to that.
It keeps it real. It keeps it because I think you do need to balance relationship and romance advice with just, okay, like what's some silly reasons to not be romantic at all and just kind of be a normal platonic human being.
Human for a minute. Yeah. Why hasn't anyone told me this before? Have you heard of Dr. Julie Smith? Why has nobody told me this before? Psychologist wrote this book. Again, pretty just straightforward, kind of like a palatable approach to stuff, but everyday tools and things that you can access in your day-to-day that might help you get through and stuff like that. And it's like, Oh, that's I will put that on for when I'm going for a walk. Definitely a decent walk listen. What else do I go?
When I was in college, I found Life 101 by Peter McWilliams. And that I think that's a good like young person's version of like this is what we should have been taught in school.
Yeah. Celeste Headlee is another one of my favorites. Do you know Celeste Headlee? She has maybe my favorite TED Talk, 10 Ways to Have a Better Conversation. She's a host, a radio host, has done all sorts of things and as an interview over the years, and she has a couple books. First one is called We Need to Talk About Having Challenging Conversations, which I think is one of the things that this country or this we don't know how to do as people. It's like we have to be on the same side in order to have a conversation is the mindset, the pervasive mindset of in the country right now. And it just bums me out. It's like, no, I want to be able to laugh at somebody's jokes who I may not necessarily agree with. I want to be able to have a conversation and interact with someone who I'm not on the same side of the fence as all the time. Because guess what? That's the fucking world we live in. I live next door to people that are very different from me. And they live next door to them who are people who are very different from them. And so it's like, how do we interact and have conversations that are not always easy, that are challenging? And how do we, like, I do a bit, I'm an Eagles fan, and I'll bring up Cowboys fans, because Eagles fans and Cowboys fans have a super contentious relationship. But there's always Cowboys fans. So it's so fun to play with that and afterwards give the guy a high five or whatever the hell it is. You know, it's like, I knew you were a Cowboys fan, Daryl. Like, I saw it when you walked in. And so it's so much more rewarding to be able to go through that process as opposed to, hey, yeah, we all think abortions should be here for everybody. You know, I don't want clapter. I don't want that kind of stuff. I want to see what it's like to interact with people in a little bit more challenging way, even though it is so rewarding and you get so much dopamine when you get to like just juice up with somebody that you're on the same side of the fence with. But you can't live there. You can't always be there. And I think Celeste Headlee does a great job of talking about that and approaching that.
Interesting.
High ranks for her. I'm a big Four Agreements guy. Do you know the Four Agreements?
I did, but forget. What is the Four Agreements?
Don Miguel Ruiz, Ancient Toltec Wisdom, a South American culture of philosophers and, you know, musicians and artists and all that kind of stuff.
I remember this book when I used to work at a bookstore long ago.
Yeah, and it's just a real quick read, and it's four super simple things. I feel like that's like improve your life 101. Don't take anything personally. Always do your best. Be impeccable with your word. Don't make assumptions. And if you can agree with those things on a day-to-day basis, that was the first time I've ever said them in succession successfully. I usually forget at least one. I was like, oh shit, am I gonna get to the fourth and draw a blank? No, yay. And the hardest one is always don't take anything personally for me, because I'm just such a soft
I'm
little
really
boy.
Bad at that. Yeah
it hits me and I need those agreements sometimes. I need some assurance. I like to do my own thing, but I also want people to agree with my own thing, and I need a little softness when I go and put myself out there vulnerably or whatever. And not everyone's gonna hit it off with you on all these different subjects. And so don't take it personally is something I will literally listen to when I'm like clipping blackberries. Like, I'll listen to that chapter
right.
And go do yard work and just zone out. Cause it's like, okay, it's fine. This isn't going to hurt you. This person is in their own world, and that's totally okay. That's totally okay.
It is really important.
But we don't feel that way. It doesn't feel like it's okay, you know? So how do you do that? How do you get past that? Somatic exercises, right?
Oh, man, they're I can't recommend it enough. I check out The Workout Witch, Liz.
Okay, The Workout Witch.
There's so many people I would recommend, but I think she's the real sleeper hit in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to pull her Instagram, because that I feel like is like a really clear, like, videos just for free of her doing the exercise. Like, it just,
yeah.
Oh, I've seen her do it. I'm going to go do it. It is The Workout Witch _.
Mm-hmm. The Workout Witch _.
I couldn't find it right away earlier. The Workout Witch _. She's got a million followers. It's
there
for a reason.
Yeah.
I really, really, really have benefited so much from that.
Uh-huh.
It's been really nice. And then I found her via Amy Fiedler, who it's amyfiedler.com, F-I-E-D-L-E-R. She is a specialist in getting into relationships after you've been through trauma.
Hmm.
So, you know, most of her clients are women, but I needed that shit. And it's really good to be like following one source to the next. And each time you kind of do independent research, see who's actually a doctor, see who's actually certified. But like that was a really good sort of life coach experience. And every time a comedian makes fun of life coaches, because there's a lot of them in LA, you'll see a lot of comics be like,
yeah,
life coaches aren't a real job. It's like, well, it's nice that you didn't need one.
Yeah.
But so,
sorry you never needed help.
Sorry your life is so great.
Stand up.
But she's like, how do you get, it says in the top of her page, are you ready to create healthier relationships after trauma? And I think that's a very good reason to get a life coach. It's like, okay, I've been to therapy. I've done the work, but what are the patterns that I actually fall into? Because my brain, my central nervous system is screwed up from having seen some shit. Yeah. And then to do the somatic exercises after that, I've been to EMDR therapy. Like, you can really start to tie things together if you figure out what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And man, Boundary Boss, that was like, that self-compassion and into Boundary Boss is a real nice wave to ride the crest of.
I love that. Yeah, I'll often put myself through these little like mini courses. Like, I'll listen to 6 books in a row on communication or 5 in a row on relationships or that kind of stuff. It's fun to like deepen your own knowledge about that stuff and see where your opinions land, and to not even have a fucking opinion sometimes. You don't need I don't need an opinion on everything. Oh,
just listen.
Yeah.
I'll get more out of listening than going off.
Yeah,
I'm writing down all your recommendations.
But it feels good. And the shitty thing about trauma, you've probably heard this, it stays in a bloodline for 14 generations. Have you heard this?
Yes.
It's bullshit. It sucks.
It's really wild once you start getting into the science of generational trauma. I think a lot of people hear generational trauma and they think, again, it's woo. They think that it is about like reincarnation. Your genetic code is altered. So what ends up happening is when you parent a child, they're given DNA that programs them to be afraid of very specific combinations of events that you might not think would be stored in DNA. But if you can, like, let's say you see a train, and then you see a loved one get hit by the train, and then you have a kid. What happens is you give your kid DNA that has changed. Your DNA changes over the course of your life. This is why we can never actually be cloned. This is why cloning technology is bullshit, at least when you see it in sci-fi and they have the same memories. It's like not humanly possible.
It's not how it works.
No. So that kid will have DNA that tells them if there is a whooshing, if there is what's like a massive like predator type feeling, it is nearby, it is sudden, it will end in deep pain forever. And it will be on a level that only a train will trigger. It's visuals similar to a train that are close enough to predatory animals where your brain will change your DNA.
Yeah.
To be like, if there's a giant steel predator rushing, your life will be ruined forever. They'll be basically born afraid of trains and be like, why am I born afraid? It seems like only a ghost should remember that stuff, but your DNA will remember. It's so insane.
When you put it like that, I am now deathly afraid of trains. That sounds horrible.
One of my many stand-up bits that I do love but never figured out a way to polish it enough for an album is like the amount of people who used to die in train accidents when that was a big thing.
and nobody was afraid of train travel still.
I mean, it is trauma though. It is something because of the amount of people who died while building the trains who were immigrant workers from Asia. In Chicago, because it was a swamp, there were trains that would run through the swamp and just leave dead bodies that nobody could recover.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that fucked up? And like that changed cultures forever. And I think the way it you're saying, like, it's in your blood. That's because it changes your DNA that drastically. It tells your body, right, I have to produce this cortisol, usually, mm-hmm, in response to this threat, this very specific threat that DNA is capable of remembering. And then you'll just be afraid of these, or afraid's maybe the wrong word. You'll have a full body reaction to things that happened to people before you were born.
And in a weird way, it's done to propagate the species, right? Like, that's why we're afraid of those things, so we don't die at that point. And again, right? We run away from that thing, we go on to something else, and it's like, oh yeah, I'm terrified all day, but I'm not dead. And, you know, there's a trade-off. So it's great.
Yeah,
Well, I'm just going to talk about, like, TV and media right now. You see this joint trauma. We have this culture of trauma now because of the pandemic, this thing that everybody has gone through. So every movie, every show is post-apocalyptic. Everything's an eye in the sky. There's always a nuclear, you know, I watched Fallout. I'm watching Three Body Problem. Like, all of this kind of stuff. It's like, now we have this shared universal experience of trauma. And they're putting that in the algorithm to make our Netflix shows right now as well.
I think what I love about apocalypse stuff is it was appealing to me before the pandemic.
Yeah.
And now I think it's gone from being science fiction to almost like realism. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, the Fallout video games have been around since, I think, like 99 or something.
Yeah.
But it's so much more relatable now that we're, like, actually starting to see the environment change. You know, the premise of Fallout is nuclear war wipes, mm-hmm, everything out, and then there's sort of like irradiated people and animals everywhere. Mm-hmm. We're like experiencing that in slow motion, and the slow motion starting to catch up with Mad Max kind of science fiction. So, like, even though the bombs haven't dropped, the bombs have dropped. The bombs are dropping in slow motion.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the science fiction of Mad Max, Fallout, they're all like, oh, radiation did all this. Microplastics are doing it over the course of decades, what you said radiation would fake do. Radiation, mm-hmm, just makes people kind of rot and die. You know, like, it doesn't turn them into mutants. But microplastics will fuck you up in a way that, or you know, like the change of certain cities into these desert-like places, like, it's okay. It was science fiction
around,
yeah, a while ago, but now it's like, okay, yeah, there's a guy with, is it Walter Goggins or Walton Goggins with no nose in Fallout? Like, there's like this shift from the sort of body horror of, look at this zombie that is sentient and able to speak. Now it's like, well, we're all starting to kind of just become that from our phones. So
we're half a zombie already. We're on the way to Noseless Walton. Who's the best as Uncle Baby Billy is one of the shows with the, have you seen Righteous Gemstones? You've got to watch that, right?
Yeah. But I don't know him as well as I used to, but, you know, they're Tim Baltz is, I knew Tim Baltz when he was like born. His mom is like my brother's godmother. My stepbrother is like his best friend. Seeing him in that and, you know,
who does he play?
Oh God, what is this character's name? He's the blonde guy with crazy eyes.
Is he the mullet kind of guy?
No, what is it? He played.
Man, that show gives me as many laughs as any show on TV right now. Judy and BJ killing it.
He's BJ.
He's BJ. Oh my gosh! Yeah. Some of those scenes this year were insane.
Yeah,
this season it was pretty great. so you're like buds with this guy. You grew up with him, huh?
Yeah, I especially as he's gotten more famous from, you know, a couple of HBO shows. It's been harder to hang, but we still text every once in a while. He's a really cool guy.
That's fun. That's so cool.
He's my little brother's friend.
Oh. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, he was a freshman when I was a junior or whatever, you know.
I saw him in the hospital when he was a baby. It's weird.
Yeah, I love that. That's so fun. I work at the Y, and it's kind of like watching a version of This Is Your Life walk through the doors. It's like, oh, there's my first grade teacher, middle school bully, high school crush. Hey, everybody, let's sign up. It is weird. We did a show at the club not too long ago, and there was a guy with a Fuck Biden shirt on in the front row, and lo and behold, he was a guy I grew up with down the street. He's like, hey, I'm Bill. I was like, oh, yes, you are. Hi, Bill. And it's just like doing comedy and doing stuff in your hometown. I'm glad I don't have this awful relationship with people around and this big traumatic bunch of events going on here, because it could get ugly. But it's just like, I lived somewhere else and now I live here again, and these are the things I do. And I'm not going to stop doing them. You know, like, I'm thankful that comedy has given me that ability to set some boundaries in a way that feel comfortable. It's like, this is who I am now. And these are the things I do. And we interact and let's see what happens. But that's community. And I kind of like community. Do you feel like you're in LA, right?
I am.
Do you have a community that you're a part of, or communities that you feel connected to? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where do you go for that sense of community, of union?
I feel pretty lucky in that I've finally started to get to know some comedians who have a good head on their shoulders and aren't self-destructive. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe they are a little bit the same way I am.
We all but, are.
Yeah. And, so it's taken a while. I mean, I've known some really cool comedians for a long time, but now I'm starting to know the kind of comedians where, like, their 2-year-old daughter calls me Uncle Pizza, you know, like they're Jen Saunderson. Shout out to Jen Saunderson. But like,
I love that.
It's a lot of that, you know. I found folks like that. There's a couple of people in the Dungeons and Dragons community who, you know, they're not comedians, but they're sort of comedy adjacent, who I've gotten close to, friends of comedians. I've gotten to be friends with just a lot of people like that. And you know, I sometimes go to some other community type stuff, but life is so busy. I would love to find, I don't know, a hiking group or some junk, or like, you know, I would love to be closer with the people at the boxing gym.
Right.
It's tricky. And the benefit of living in LA is there are a lot of entertainment people where, you know, the fact that they're a comedian is almost a coincidence.
Right.
It's not, it's not that, like, it's specifically because they're fellow comedians. It's because, oh, you were in the same world. Like, I'm buddies with a couple of, like, a married couple, and they have a kid, and I will cat sit their cats. They will cat sit my cats.
Love it.
But they haven't done stand-up, which is how I met them, in over 10 years. They're now a writer and an actor and live very different lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, you start to realize a lot of those people will stay in your life because you just, you end up knowing a network, a web that is kind in the same way you are kind. So I have that.
That's great.
And I just, I've fallen into it by being old. I think by the time you're my age, an elderly 45 from your young spry 40.
It's a baby.
How about you? Do you get it from a certain place that's not comedy?
Yeah, I think it's important to have non-comedy friends. I think it just kind of, people aren't as obsessive about stuff in a way that, because for me, success is balance right now. You mentioned balance. That's kind of what I try to access in my life is, and find strength, flexibility, and balance. That's what I'm trying to hone in on more as I grow. Strength, flexibility, and balance in all areas of life. And so I've gotten involved with Oregon Country Fair last year was one of the things I did for the first time. Have you heard of fair?
I mean, I've been to county fairs and state fairs in other states and counties, but no.
Ooh, boy, this is a different thing. The Oregon Country Fair is like this 3-day festival in the woods, bunch of neurodivergent hippies creating this amazing, just like little town of everything, the most delicious food, amazing experiences and performances. I got to run the comedy stage there last year, like, and brought this awesome stage. Who was there? I bumped into Reggie Watts. Like, my friend and I were talking about him, and 5 minutes later, no joke, he was in front of us. And then so we just, like, got high with Reggie Watts for half the weekend. Nice. And, like, he came to the show and got lost and blah, blah, and did a couple guest appearances and was, like, at 1 a.m. doing a Reggie Watts friggin' performance in the middle of the street where you're, you know, stoned and eating the most delicious ice cream you've ever had, and then you see a Reggie Watts experience on the we met him in front of the nude sauna. It's just like this amazing place where you can see and do so many things in this weekend of like joy and experimentation. And we just sat around for 5 hours talking about it and like how it felt like an actual community where everybody was bringing their different gifts and their skills, whether you're like cleaning the toilets or doing the towing or putting up the stages or running the comedy scene or doing the poetry, whatever, or like you're a weird vaudevillian who does a show in the woods and comes out of the water. Like, it's amazing. So much fun. Oh, and I wish I could remember the comedian. Ron Lynch. Seth was doing a show with Ron Lynch that weekend, and Ron got to come and experience it. And we did I kind of was inspired by Late Late Breakfast. And so I would have comedians do fair-related challenges during their sets. Like, someone had to eat a burrito from the shop across the street, or like someone... Happy Hecklers was one, or like Line of Hugs, so people could come give you hugs, or like shout out positive heckles during your set. Just like this kind of spirit. It's like Woodstock reimagined 50 years later. Very Woodstock inspired. And I'm just so lucky it's down the road, 30 minutes in Veneta. That is nice. And it was this amazing experience. And right now we're in the process of like applying or like putting in names and doing all the logistic stuff. But it's like annoying, and it's so not the part that the hippies love to do.
Yeah,
but it's also one of the most important parts so that it can move forward and be just this fun thing. And so it, like
sounds a lot like Woodland Burning Man.
Yes, yeah, exactly. It's like Burning Man without the tech. And and so it's just a blast. It's something I encourage everyone to look into at least once in their lives. I try to like do a light pitch to different comedian friends. You know, I'm like, hey, Kyle, you would love to experience fair. You know what? Like, Ben, you know, I talked to Ben Kronberg or other guys that I've had on the podcast and stuff like that, because it's like super fun and a real trip to be a part of. Like, it's one of those things I've never experienced before because I'm not like a festival guy. And so it was just a total delight. And to be able to have interaction with people from a variety of different things, and everybody gets to talk, bring their thing into the gumbo, and we have a blast together, and it's weird and hairy and naked and sweaty and dirty, and you're there and you couldn't be happier. So we'll see how it goes. So that's one of the big ones for me. And so I think it's just important to find those variety of communities. And that's like the gym, the Y now too, where I work, because it's like, oh, people here have love exercise and health and that kind of stuff, and so it's nice to be around that. So that definitely gives me a sense of community as well, that kind of stuff. And that's what I want to do with the podcast and stuff. I want to get to know people more. I wanted to hear what your experience is like. I want to hear what other Derek Sheen's experience was like, and all the people who are gracious enough to come on. It's like I just like talking with people. And I want to know more about people and learn from other people just in a way that like, see what's worked for you, what's good for you, you know, what are the nice things that get you through your days and that kind of stuff. So, and okay. I am conscious about, you know, your time and that kind of stuff. So I do tend to end kind of with one of these questions. That's what advice would you give your younger self? Like, starting with comedy, it could be comedy related, health related, whatever. Or what do you wish you knew when you were starting out or had focused on?
I would say that it is way more important to be alone than you think it is.
I would say, you know, I spent a lot of time just alone as a kid, and thought like mm-hmm. part of the appeal of being an adult was just to throw myself into connections and groups. But I think your connections with other people, as important as they are, need to be based in a solid sense of self and independence. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would tell myself, hey, like, you don't actually, you know, need other people the way you need yourself. I think I would be like, there's a real consequence to abandoning yourself. Mm-hmm. So focus on how not to do that before throwing yourself into connections with certain people.
Yeah. I love that. And it's easier said than done. You know, a lot Indeed. Of times comedy is easy to get swept up in. It's easy to go up and down in the whole ride, have the drinks, do the parties, meet the people. And so taking time to be alone, I think people get on stage because they're uncomfortable being alone sometimes. We want to get into
it. Absolutely. But I think also just like dating, you know, I think there's a lot of people who want your attention because they want to exploit it. And I certainly fell into a lot of connections with people who like could tell I was compassionate, could tell I was mm-hmm. supportive, and were like, how can I drain this source dry? And I would be like, well, if you pay a little bit of attention to me, I'm in heaven. Yeah. So if I could tell my young self something, it would be like, well, you know, like those people will be a detriment and a distraction. Just learn how to be alone.
Yeah. Words of wisdom from Dan, the Giving Tree Telfer.
Oh, no. Yeah. Don't be the tree. Don't be the tree.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing. So I totally get that. It's easy to do. It's totally easy to do. Right on, Dan. Well, thank you so much for hanging out a little bit today.
Yeah, really, my pleasure. Thank you for having me, Rudy.
Yeah, totally, dude. Before we part, just one, dantelfer.card.co and find him on the socials.
Two R's in card. And then, Instagram, I promote everything. My little link tree is there. You can find my Patreon and my stand-up, all that stuff.
Awesome. Right on. Well, stick around for a minute when I push stop so it uploads, if you don't mind.
You got it.
Appreciate that. Any parting words before we go, Dan?
Be kind to each other, I guess.
I love it. Be kind, y'all. Thank you for stopping by, Dan, and thank you for listening today. I appreciate it. We'll see you next time.
Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym, not jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym. Jokes in the gym.
With Rudy Tibersi.
Now I'm starting to know the kind of comedians where, like, their 2-year-old daughter calls me Uncle Pizza. You know, like, they're Jen Saunderson. Shout out to Jen Saunderson. But